This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Are we good? Are we ready? Fine. Hello. If your mind is feeling small, if you're feeling a bit shriveled up there, if you're feeling a bit too close to Earth, well, shall we change that? How do you fancy it? Shall we take a trip across the whole universe with this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly? Yes, hello, thanks for giving us a listen. My name is Dan. This is the show that brings you all the most amazing, the weird and the dangerous stuff that exists in one place. We'll travel to the most deadly part of the whole galaxy. We'll get you back in around half an hour. I promise, no one will notice you've gone. It's just you and me. This week, we're looking at why wombats plop out cube-shaped poo. I thought we'd get right into like the most disgusting stuff of the week early on. Also, we'll learn about moths and how they manage to escape the terrifying clutches of bats. And we'll get very close to the ground to have a look at the most mean creatures on the planet. That's on the way after we catch up with one of our favourite geniuses here at the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's Professor Hallux, and this week, he's making you better.
Professor Hallux's kaleidoscopic antibiotic. I think I need a replacement body. Mine's rubbish.
Oh, come on, that's not true. Your body is doing a great job of protecting you from infections.
Doesn't feel like it. Go on, do us a favour and take a look inside me, would you, Nanobot?
Oh, all right. I'll charge up the heli-telly bubble and get down to the size of an atom to investigate. Back in a jiffy.
Heli-telly bubble, ready to launch in 3, 2, 1.
Gosh. It's getting hot as we approach the Professor's skin. He's got quite a fever.
Welcome to the immune system in action. Microbes like being at the body's normal temperature, 37 degrees Celsius. They don't like it when the body raises the temperature to help fight off infections. That's what happens when you have a fever.
Even at this size, it's very difficult to get inside a human body. Skin is designed to be a tough, waterproof barrier that keeps foreign things out. That's why if you have a cut or a graze, it's a good idea to wash and cover up so that infections can't sneak in. Let's try somewhere different. Setting coordinates for the ear.
Oh, it tickles. Careful as you go. Don't bonk me on the stirrup.
Even where there are holes, like your ears and nose, you'll find substances like mucus, earwax and hairs, all designed to trap particles and viruses. And the Professor certainly has got hairy ears. Hold on.
In 4 micrometres, bear right on the eustachian tube and merge with the throat.
Travelling down the Professor's lungs now. Left a bit. He's got a chest infection by the look of it. I can see Streptococcus pneumoniae bacteria. There's certainly a lot of them around, gathering in pairs. No wonder he's feeling so grotty.
White blood cells have been detected. The body's immune system has been activated.
As you may know, there's more to blood than just, well, blood. As well as red blood cells that carry oxygen to all parts of the body, platelets and other substances suspended in a fluid called plasma, blood also contains white blood cells that help the body fight infections. Look, here comes a lymphocyte. That's a type of white blood cell coming to the rescue.
Some lymphocytes produce special proteins called antibodies, which attach to the surface of the harmful microbe, like a key in a lock, helping to destroy them. Different lymphocytes have different keys, so sometimes it takes a while for the human body to find the right match. But when it is found, the microbes are in trouble. Sometimes antibodies will cause the harmful microbes to burst open to prevent them from reproducing.
What's going on in there, Nanobot?
If I'm right, this lymphocyte is using its antibodies to alert the phagocytes. They're a different type of white blood cell. Yup, here they come. They're chasing the bacteria and are eating it. Incredible! Although I don't want them to think I'm a harmful bacteria. Time to go. I think we're being followed.
The clever thing about the immune system is that once white blood cells have successfully defeated the bacteria, other cells, called memory cells, remain in their body. This way, if the same microbe appears again, the body has its defences ready.
I do believe I'm feeling a little better, Nanobot. Thanks for giving me a checkup.
Don't thank me. Thank those hard-working white blood cells and all your other body's defences.
Professor Hallux's Kaleidoscopic Antibiotic, with support from eBug and Public Health England. Find out more at funkidslive.com/hallux or visit e-bug.eu.
It's shout-out time on the show. First, we're headed over to the northwest of the United States of America. I always feel very important when I say United States of America. We're going to Washington to say hello to Micah. Hello, Micah. He's 11 years old and he's left a review for us over on the iTunes podcast store, which is probably the best place that you can get in touch with the show, by the way. Micah's got two questions. He asks, how do plants and cells grow? And he also asks how we condense oxygen on the other side of the photosynthesis chain. It's two amazing questions. Very deep there, Micah. And also, they're two questions that I think I probably need, like, a proper photosynthesis professor on to ask to answer for you. It's a little bit out of my depth, talking about photosynthesis and cells and plants and how the whole life cycle there works. So I'll sort out a proper genius to come on the show soon for you, Micah. Thanks for letting me know. Also, we'll stay in America and we will say hello to Michelle. Michelle is 10 years old. Hey, Michelle. And she said hello over on the iTunes podcast store to us as well. I promise it's the best place to get in touch with the show if you want a shout out. If you've got a real science question niggling around your brain as well, something that you've been told at school, maybe that you just think, how could that possibly be true? It's blown my mind. Or maybe you've been told something by your mum and dad and you think, hang on, I mean, you're the one that gives me my pocket money, so I'm not going to disagree with you, but I don't think that's true. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll ask my mate Dan on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. If you've got a question that you need answered, get to the iTunes podcast store and leave us a review. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, often on this show, we talk about, like, incredibly mind-blowing things that happen on a huge scale, don't we? You know, like planets and jungles and rockets breaking through the atmosphere. This week, I want to focus on something tiny that's amazing, and it makes a huge difference. You see, scientists have found out why bats find it so difficult to make a meal out of a moth. Now, Professor Mark Holder-Reed is from the Bristol University, and he's on the phone to tell us more. Hey, Mark.
Hey, hello. Hi, Dan.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, I don't know how brilliant a job I did of explaining the whole bats making a meal out of moths, but it's a really incredible bit of evolution in nature. Can you tell us, like, a little outline of what's going on?
Oh, yeah, of course. So, every night over our heads, we can't see that, really. All these moths fly around and running for their lives, trying to hide from these bats. And these bats are equipped with this fantastic tool called biosonar, where they produce sound, very high-pitched sound that we can't hear, and then they listen to the echoes bouncing back off the insects. And if they hear an echo, they zoom in on it and just grab the flying insect out of thin air. And that is a very powerful technique. And moths really don't want to be eaten, and they have developed a number of defences.
So how many moths do we know so far that have developed this extraordinary defence?
Ah, okay. So the defence that we are talking about is that the whole body of these moths is covered in it looks a bit like a fur or a layer of scales, like roof tiles. And what they do is they absorb the sound. They absorb the sound in a way that it doesn't go back to the mat.
Like, seriously, so you can chuck me any amazing creature in the world, you know, sharks or fish that live down below the ocean that can't really be seen because they've never seen light. But the idea that moths, the skin of moths, can absorb the sound that bats are making so they can't see that they're there is just utterly incredible.
Yeah, well, imagine how surprised we were when we looked at it and found that it worked so well.
So where did you start then, Mark? How did you have an inkling that this is what was going on?
This is not an idea that we came up with anew. So people have been thinking about the furriness of the moth for some time and potential uses. But we are the first one to actually have the tools and apply them to try and measure what's going on and, most importantly, understand how it's happening.
So you talk about tools. What kind of tools do you need to research something on such a tiny scale?
Yeah, so what you need to build is like a little artificial bat. So you need to have a loudspeaker that can produce the same frequencies the bats do, and you need to have suitable microphones that can pick up the faint echoes that are coming off different surfaces. And then the next thing we did is we caught some of these moths and then put them into an apparatus where we held them in one spot and measured how much sound was bouncing off their wings. And then the next thing we did was real fun. We shaved them. So we just used a little brush and a bit of a foam, a sponge.
You shaved moths?
Yeah, we shaved moths. We just got all the scales and all the fur and all the hair off. It doesn't look half as nice after you've shaved it. But then we repeated the measurement. So we looked at how much energy was then coming back, and surprisingly, far more. So we have shown that the scales and the hair on the body are actually sound absorbers, a bit like the stealth fighter plane has a layer on it that absorbs the radar, enemy radar. These ones, these scales absorb the sonar of bats, and thereby they become, well, not invisible, but much harder to spot
now,
for a bat sonar.
I know that this is the case with the cabbage tree emperor moth. Is it the same with many more types of the species?
So what we've done so far, what we've now discovered and reported, is for this one moth species. But many, in particular those that are closely related in the same family, many species look very, very similar, if not identical. So even though we haven't measured them yet, we expect them that they have a very similar protective coating because it looks exactly the same.
Because the most fascinating part is that these moths, they don't have normal ears, don't they? So it's not like they can hear the approaching predator. So that the fact that they've evolved to have this really ingenious method of going undercover is quite something. Have you ever seen anything else like this in nature, a really ingenious way of being undetected?
Fish do this all the time. You know, the silvery fish underwater, they sort of make sure that all the light that comes and passes around is reflected off their body, so they don't cast a shadow and they look exactly like the background. So that is a really neat way to do camouflage yourself. But camouflage against sonar, nobody has proven that is happening before.
It is just truly an amazing thing. I've never quite heard something like this while I've been doing the show for quite a while now. Is there anything else that you've discovered about them? Because they sound like quite an amazing creature. You know, if they've evolved the way to do this, what else can you tell us about this particular type of moth?
Okay, well, these moths, they're really beautiful, I have to say. So they're colourful, they have, I think they mimic a rotting leaf when they're resting during the daylight. They don't want to be eaten by birds. So they try to look like a rotting leaf. There's a little hole in the wing. It's not a real hole. It's transparent, but it looks like holes you find in leaves quite often. But what they also have on their hind wing, they have really bright orange eye patches, which you usually can't see. But if a bird should detect them and try and attack them, what they do is they open their forewings, and then they raise their hind wings, and it really looks like a big owl looking back at you, and they even move their hind wings to try and create the emotion of an owl really looking at that predatory bird. So if you're a blackbird and you attack one of these and all of a sudden two owl eyes stare back at you, you better take flight. And that is a visual protection that these guys have on top of the acoustic protection.
The best thing, and it's something that we always need to keep at the front of our minds really, is that if you are believing thoroughly, you know, the theory of evolution, none of that's intentional. The fact that a moth's wing absorbs sound, it's all chances of nature and the survival of the fittest. That's the most important, that's the most amazing part for me of the whole lot.
I completely agree, and that is truly mind-boggling how it has evolve that level of detail. Because what we found is for the scales to do this, they really have to have the perfectly structured nanoscale. So we are talking structures that are way below the structure size of a millimeter. So it's nanometer structures that are there, and they're all required to become this sound absorber. And evolution is very, very good at creating such really tiny structures to do amazing things.
It's design and definition on that tiny type of scale that just it keeps everything going, I think. Mark, thank you so much for explaining more to us on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Right, let's do Dangerous Dan. Every week we have a look at some of the most mean and evil things on the planet. The stuff that evolution, nature and biology has forced to act a bit cruelly. Today we're having a look at a creature that spends most of its time underneath the earth. The driver ant is one of the most deadly beasts in the world. It's got the largest colony of any other insect as well. Up to 22 million ants can be found in each colony of drivers. They're a blood dark red colour. They've got two massive pincers on top of their head as well, which they use to squeeze apart anything that comes into its path. Now, with their huge colony, they attack in packs. And they're fierce, they plan meticulously, they figure out when's the right time to make a move. And they're ridiculously aggressive as well. They do whatever they can for food. Usually they go for earthworms, like a poor little wriggly thing that wiggles into its path. But even an elephant would run if it saw a swarm of driver ants. It knows the damage that these things can cause. They'll even go for us humans as well. They slash the flesh, the eyes, the nostrils. Once they've bitten you as well, they'll inject this red-hot formic acid into your bodies. It can leave you twitching on the ground for dear life in a matter of minutes. Now, you know in horror films, right, when you see an ant completely devour a person? Well, that's where this comes from. The driver ant is one of the key beasts that does this. They can eat everything on you. They can strip you down to just your skeleton in around 4 hours. Right, stay there. We'll uncover the secret of wombat dung in just a sec. Honestly, proper scientists, some of the smartest people in the world, they've spent the last few years trying to uncover the mystery of wombat poo. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. First, let's catch up with one of our own Fun Kids scientists. This is Marina Ventura, and today we're looking at the sky.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Hi there, Marina Ventura here. Now, as we've been finding out, when you hear the words weather and climate, you might think they mean the same thing, but they're quite different. Isn't that right, Matty?
Hi, Marina. Yes, that's correct. It might be rainy today or it might be sunny. That's the weather. But climate is the pattern of weather in a place over a much longer time.
And different parts of the world have very different patterns of weather. Why is that?
The Earth's climate is driven by energy from the sun, which arrives in the form of heat. Half of this energy travels through our atmosphere and reaches the Earth's surface. The other half is either absorbed by the atmosphere or reflected back into space. Because the Earth is a sphere, the sun's rays reach the Earth's surface in polar regions at a much more slanted angle than at the equator. So, straight away, we know that the poles are colder than the equator. Now, when things aren't in balance, nature likes to even things out. So the extra energy at the equator needs to be spread across the planet. And it's this that creates different climate zones across the world. Warm air rises at the equator and moves toward the poles. Where warm, wet air rises, we get thunderstorms and tropical rainforests. And where air sinks, it stops clouds from forming. So it rains less, even making deserts.
So, Map App, how many climate zones are there and how do they differ?
Well, around the equator we have tropical climates, which are hot and humid. This is where you'll find the world's rainforests. Then there are arid or dry climates, like you'd find in deserts. Next is Mediterranean, with hot dry summers and cooler, wetter winters. And then there are temperate climates.
That's what we have in the UK, isn't it? Where summers are mild and winters aren't too cold.
That's right. In areas that are a very long way from the sea, the climate is continental, with long cold winters and short hot summers. Finally, there's polar climates, which experience long periods of extreme cold.
Hang on, though. I've been to countries like France and Italy in the Mediterranean, and depending upon where I am, I've experienced very different weather conditions. They have lots of snow in winter, and some of their mountains are even snow-covered all year round. But they also have beautiful beaches, great fun during the hot and dry summers. So, if you've got both snow-covered mountains and hot beaches, does that mean they don't have a Mediterranean climate?
Of course not. It just means that local climates in a country can be different to the region's climate. This can be for lots of reasons. High places, like mountains, tend to be colder because the air is cooler the higher you go. Vegetation can also affect the local climate we experience. In equatorial rainforests, dense vegetation blocking the wind, combined with high temperatures and rainfall, means it's a very humid place to be. Where there's no vegetation, the air can be much drier and the wind can blow. In busy cities, the air temperature is often warmer than the surrounding countryside, particularly at nighttime. This is due to buildings and roads absorbing heat during the day and giving it off at night. Another thing that can affect a local climate is the wind. It might be that part of a country frequently catches wind from another region. This is called a prevailing wind. If it's coming from a hotter place, this might raise temperatures. Or if it's from a colder area, it will cause the local temperature to drop.
I think I want to be back on the beach. This wind's coming from a very cold place. Lovely. Time for a dip.
Even the oceans have a part to play in influencing our weather and climate.
As we shall find out later. Thanks, Mappy. And just because a place has one climate doesn't mean it won't change. Climate scientists take measurements over long periods of time to track patterns in temperature and rainfall. These help us know what to expect today and in the future, but are also a great way to see what changes have happened in the past. Amazing to think that 20,000 years ago, the UK would have been in the Ice Age, and our climate here would have been similar to the polar climates that we see today. Cold enough to have a pet polar bear. Join us next time when we'll be finding out about how and why climates change.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
It's time to talk about all the sciencey stuff that has been in the news around you this week. NASA said it will send its 2020 Mars rover to the Jezero crater. It believes that the rocks in this 50-kilometer-wide bowl, the crater, it could hold a clue of ancient life on the planet. Satellite images of this crater on Mars, it point to a river that once may have flowed through it, which could show the signs of old life. Also, scientists have uncovered why the poo of a wombat is cube-shaped. Apparently, sorry for grossing you out, the elasticity of their intestines helps sculpt the poo into cubes so it doesn't roll away down the hills, and they use it to mark their territory. And finally, this has been big, terrifyingly sad news this week. A dead sperm whale that washed ashore in Indonesia has been found to have nearly 6 kilograms of plastic in its stomach. They found 115 drinking cups, 4 plastic bottles, 25 plastic bags, and 2 pairs of flip-flops as well. All of those plastics killed a 9.5-meter-long beautiful whale, and this has made the calls to ban single-use plastics get even louder. And that is the end of this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Remember, if you've got a science question that's racking around your brain, something that you just can't figure out, maybe you can't get to sleep at night wondering why the rings of Saturn are in a ring, or you can't wake up in the morning brilliantly because you're just wondering why do donuts taste much better when they're in a ring shape. No matter what it is, it doesn't need to be about rings. Let me know. I will try and get a proper science expert to answer it for you. You can send me the question over on the iTunes podcast store. Also, while you're there, we've got all our brilliant Fun Kids science series for free for you to download. Some of them you've heard today. They're also on that Fun Kids app that you can download, and they're there for you on the free on over at funkidslive.com. And you can listen to Fun Kids with the UK's biggest children's radio station. You can find us on your DAB digital radio all around the country. We're over on the free Fun Kids app, and have a listen at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB Digital Radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.